You are in tune to the Mindful Podcast with Coach Joaquin. All right, welcome back to another episode of the Mindful Podcast. This episode, we have Lindy Davis, former University of Portland Pilots distance runner. Now, Lindy is coming fresh off the Olympic trials marathon qualifying. And what I like about this story is it's one that we don't hear very often of. So much in the media, we hear the stories of the front runners, of what they took to get there and what they took to become champions. What about all the rest of the athletes? That whole mid-pack, end-pack, we don't get a chance to necessarily hear that, their stories. And in Lindy's case, her story is stepping up to the Olympic qualifying stage, the best of the best in the U.S., and having anything but her perfect race. And what I mean by that is her qualifying time for Olympic trials was a 2:42:41, which comes out to about a 6:12 mile pace for a marathon. Smoking, right? Now, when it came to the L.A. marathon, it was kind of like the perfect storm to have anything but one's best race. And what I mean by that is this past Olympic marathon trials was one that had the most dropouts in U.S. Olympic trials history. For the women, 25% of the field did not make it to the finish line. For the men, the number goes up to about 35%. And Lindy shares what her experience was and how she made a big shift from dreading something that she worked so hard to get to, and what the mind shift was to make it enjoyable and to get to the finish line, and what adjustments she made along the road during not only that race, but in all the preparation. Now, another thing that stands out to me with Lindy's training is in 2010, she started a vegan diet. And a lot of people wonder if that's even healthy to maintain to begin with. And with Lindy's success about becoming a vegan and still being a high performance athlete, and especially those at the University of Portland, giving a shout out to Rob Connor there, that being vegan and still being a high performing athlete or high performer in anything for that matter is very, very much a real thing. And she goes into some of her transitions and tips and tricks that she shares. With that, we have Lindy Davis running through adversity with the champion mindset. Lindy, thank you for being mindful today. Excited to have you.
Yeah, of course. Happy to be here.
Yeah. So coming fresh off the LA Marathon qualifying, I wanted to start off with your track or your running career in high school. What did you envision then and to where you are today? Mm-hmm. As a high school athlete?
Well, high school started out because my strengths didn't play to any other sport. And so that led me to running. And I found that I had some talent in the sport of running. And so in high school, though, a lot of it was having fun running to Dairy Queen that was 4 miles away from the high school, and then walk jogging back because we'd have an ice cream stomach ache. So high school was just a lot of joy with the sport and community with my teammates. And I'm pretty thankful for that because it didn't burn me out. But of course, by the time I got to my senior year, I realized that I had enough talent, and with the combination of my work ethic, I could get to state. So then when racing at the state level and seeing all these other athletes outside of my high school that were really cut and strong and just these fierce looking high schoolers, and I thought, well, I want to be like them. And so that was junior year, actually. So by the time I got to my senior year, I was really focused on running well enough to get a spot on a college team. So that that was sort of the transition there. And I'm, like I said, I'm really thankful that it didn't start out so intense that I burnt myself out. And I was still a lot of joy in the sport and being able to stop mid-run and look at something weird that we saw, or, you know, doing leapfrogs. Now when you jump over the people, yeah, just playing. And so to have play and running be a mix at the very beginning of my quote unquote career, the beginning of my career, it's pretty awesome. But yeah, that led me to University of Portland, where I was able to get some really good training and coaching. Not that high school wasn't, but I wasn't asking my coaches to train me super hard. And when I got to college, I was given the tools and the training rooms and the team to run with, where in high school, my chance to run fast was when I was in a race with other girls. And I didn't have that every day at practice. And I think a lot of girls find that in high school, that they're running with the boys team until they get to college. So yeah, that was the transition there.
Cool. All right. So going from high school, I like how you mentioned it was a lot of fun that you learned in high school, and recognizing as you start to enter that competitive level, the pressure, everyone telling you got to be the best every day, you got to work towards something, it can lead to burnout, or at least to some kind of anxiety, especially if you have a bomb at race or something. It's like, how do you come back to that? What are some things you've learned to help you just keep, okay, this day wasn't that great, I still have tomorrow, or however it may be? What are things you've taken on as an athlete and you've incorporated in life to keep yourself above water and not burn out?
Yeah. That's a great question. And it makes me sad when I see other people that burn out. But also, burnout isn't the worst thing, because you can step away. That's the power of running. You can step away for a year, maybe not when you're under scholarship at a university, but you can step away and then find the love for it the next year when you find a different distance or something like that. So running, I find with a lot of runners, there's seasons. And I think that's also really special. But for me, to not burn out, I've found a rule for myself, and it's the 10% rule. So every season, I try to do 10% more. And that could be something like 10% more mileage, 10% more speed, 10% more strength from what I was doing the previous season, or it could be 10% more sleep, more naps, or more stretching. Or one season it was foam rolling. And I got really obsessed with foam rolling, so much so that I had a teammate go to Home Depot with me, and we cut the PVP pipe. Is that what it's called? PVC? PVC pipe. I had said it wrong. But yeah, so we had a guy at Home Depot cut it into increments, so we brought it back to the locker room so we could roll on the hard pipe. I think it's still in the locker room at University of Portland. But to have that structure, to not get overwhelmed every season that I can do so much more, and you start looking at what other athletes are doing and getting overwhelmed with all of the different types of training and different activities you could do to get better, and to focus on what you have been doing and then a little bit more. And so every season I've been able to add a little bit more, and it's kept me in check for not getting burnt out. And you're kind of excited about not adding too much, because you know the next slice will come. And it just, for me, it's braided in. It started out as a really small braid, and now it's quite hefty, I think, with my training now. But it's been perfect for me to keep me balanced and not overwhelmed. But, you know, whenever you said to have a bad race and to not get down and burnt out about that, there are bad races, but anyone can learn from a race. And if you have a good coach and good teammates, you can find the good out of the race and what you've learned. And to learn that early on in your running is really important. And luckily for me, I did. And so you don't beat yourself up about it. I think I had someone tell me once, it's like the 24-hour rule or something where you have 24 hours to be bummed about the race. Maybe it's even less. It might be a couple hours. And then you move on. That was your day. It's over. And now you get to have another chance. Hopefully, if you're not injured, then you have another scene ahead of you of whether how to come back. So, like I said, it's just a bunch of seasons. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, I definitely like the 24-hour rule because it gives you a time to, or it sounds like, time to reflect.
Accept it.
Go through the motions. And then, okay, the time limit's up. Yeah. Moving on.
Yeah.
So you give yourself that space, it seems like.
Yeah.
Cool. I like that. So with that 10% rule, it also sounds like you're making just...
a lot of rules, I guess. Now that I said two. Shoot.
But all the small changes you're making to adjust your own course to be a little bit better rather than I need to climb this whole mountain this year or this season. It's little steps that you learn a little bit more, add a little bit more to the tool belt.
And
over the progression of years, you accustomed to having a pretty strong or pretty rounded out tool belt that works for you. And so I like the idea of taking that, and I can relate to it as well. But you did mention something about the bad race, and I wanted to point out here the Sacramento time you had ran a 2:42:41, which is your qualifying time for the Olympic trials. And that's about an average of 6:13 mile pace.
Yeah. So, that was gun time, but yeah, it was 6:12 overall to qualify. And, that was a great race. That was one of my best performances of my life. That was qualifying.
That's awesome. Yeah. And then come to the Olympic trials, the game changed quite a bit.
Yes.
So, and to give perspective to the listeners, the Olympic trials, there was 198 women that made it to a starting line, but 149 only finished. To just kind of give you an idea of the conditions they were in. So 25% of the field didn't make it to the finish on this marathon. And tell us about a little bit what was going on during that time frame.
Well, one little call out to female power. So that was 25% of the female field didn't finish.
Right.
And a little over 30% of the men didn't finish. So
36%.
That's even more. That's pretty awesome too.
Yeah.
But a testimony to the heat of the race. It was a late start race, started at a little after 10 a.m. in LA. So it was 80 by the finish. Most dropouts in Olympic trial history, the hottest Olympic trial marathon in U.S. history as well. And it was really challenging. It was a crowning accomplishment to get to the Olympic trials. And then I knew going there for me, it was a bit of a victory lap of how my training since a girl running a 5K in high school to the career it's been and now running with sponsors for Wazelle and other companies as well. So I knew going in it was going to be a tough race because I had qualified to get there pretty close to the time of the marathon, the Olympic trials. So I didn't have much time to recover from the qualifying race to the actual trials. So going in already on some pretty worked legs. But I knew I was going to finish the race. From the very beginning, there were a lot of people already talking about dropping out. And that mentally was very challenging, even just standing on the start line, knowing that it was already buzzing around. And then to be running, I was running not towards the front. I was running in the back. And so there were more people dropping out in my pace group. And so to be running in groups and to have girls dropping out to my left and to my right, literally beside me running the pace that I was running. It was hard. It was really hard on my spirit. But and I have to say there were times when I usually would run with my water where I stopped and I drank my water and I walked for a little bit to swallow and make sure I got enough water and to take in how challenging it was. It was really a hard race, a totally different type of race than qualifying was.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Your finishing time there compared to your qualifying 2:43 mm-hmm. was 3:10. And I like what you said here. This is from your blog.
Okay, which, yeah.
Awesome blog. I even asked myself if I was having fun because running is supposed to bring me joy. I wasn't having fun. In that moment, I was scared that I was losing my joy of the sport. So I let those thoughts go and changed my mindset that I was lucky to be at the Olympic trials. I didn't need to drop out because I was hurt or in excruciating pain. Mm-hmm. Where was the conversation taking place where you're on the line, you hear people saying, oh, I might even not even go off the gun with this one. You're looking around, you're running your pace, and people are dropping around you. Mm-hmm. And these are America's prime marathon runners at that time.
Yeah, best in the U.S.
What's that conversation going on where you can change that mindset where you're on your victory lap, you hear people cheering you, and you're like, this sucks right now. What was that mind shift while you're in that race? And you're like, okay, mm-hmm. I need to make this enjoyable.
Not me. I'm not the person that drops out. And I told myself that over and over in the race. And like I said, at that point, I was questioning the joy of running. And that made me so sad because I want to always love it, and I want to love it when I'm a grandma, to be able to go out and go for a jog and not hold this anger or resentment for the sport. And so I thought about my friends here in Portland that raced at the qualifying race with me and didn't qualify, and they didn't get to go to LA. And mm-hmm. I had the opportunity to push myself and the qualifying race to make it. And I had the opportunity to sign with Wazelle. And mm-hmm. I was proud of that. And I wanted to represent myself and the company and my family and even the girls here in Portland that I had trained so hard with, doing long runs on Savvy's Island and in Forest Park and so many hard miles that I knew I was going to finish. And when I thought about them and I just put it back in perspective outside of my body's pain in that moment, because pain goes away, I thought about them and it made me happy again. Happy and pain. Happy. Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely see there's mm-hmm. pain in not only the yeah. marathon itself,
yeah.
but damn, it's hot out here and the yeah. asphalt's maybe melting my shoes now.
I had a coach one time we were in a hill workout and they called it the hill of suffering. And you think about someone that's suffering more in life and you put it in your workout and you run it for them, or you run it for some other struggle or some other suffering. So yeah, the hill of suffering. And so that race became a little bit of the race of suffering, where I was thinking about all of the difficulties around the world and in Portland. And I was lucky enough to be healthy to race and be on that line. And so I couldn't quit. Yeah.
It sounds like a big perspective adjustment for appreciation. Yeah. And so do you feel that that's, you've learned that through that coach or earlier in the season, or that that made it a habit, not only in racing, but maybe in life as well?
Mm-hmm. I would say it's probably just more family upbringing and being taught that as a young girl to appreciate and to be kind and to know how lucky we are. So, I mean, just to be lucky enough for you and I to have nice shoes that that don't injure us and give us shin splints after 300 miles, I mean, that's huge.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I love running, and there were moments where I was frustrated in the Olympic trials race, but when I finished, I loved it. So that phase was there, and there was a valley, but I overcame it. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I can definitely imagine frustration where it's like, okay, I need to take care of me. Mm-hmm. Here's a water station. I need to walk a few steps to take this water in. And you're in a race, and that goes against everything you and I have learned about racing.
Yeah.
But it goes back to I need to take care of me and be in a place of just enjoying this. Mm-hmm. And I'll post a picture of that so people can kind of see, like, okay, I'm on CoachJoaquinTraining.com, mm-hmm. where it's that shot of, like, I'm getting water, and you can see, at least what I see body language wise, say a little struggle, like, damn, but
yeah,
this is me, and this is where I'm at right now.
Mm-hmm. It was confusing. Yep.
A whopping 3 hours to work on that. Yep. Little chitter chatter. So going from your college career, which I remember you're having some battles in your senior year, mm-hmm. To the next level of the Olympic trials, what did you have to let go of to get to that next level?
I don't really connect with what I let go of. Mm-hmm. I would say it was more what to focus on. Mm-hmm. And applying myself in a more direct way. And so I always knew in college that I was one of the athletes that enjoyed the long run the most on our Sunday long runs. And I also noticed that whenever we had longer rests between intervals on the track, that I usually didn't need as long of a rest. I'm not saying I was going faster in the interval, but that I was quick to recover. And so identifying that and applying it to a different race, which was the marathon. I'd like to go back and try to do the 10K faster than I did in college, but I think it was really unique with the marathon that it really played to my endurance strengths. And even just growing up with my family, we hiked a lot of the Pacific Crest Trail and did a bunch of backcountry hiking, and with heavy packs and out for days and many nights. And so the mindset of an endurance athlete, and it was just easier for me to perform and use those skills in the marathon than the speed of maybe the 10K. So I didn't let something go from college to the career, post-collegiate career. It was, just having more mental stamina in a race, and also just more time to learn about yourself and your own training too. Yeah, I used to do a lot of push-ups. I don't do as many push-ups anymore. I like planks now. You know, there's just little things where you just like hated certain exercises that you had to do in college. And like, why? Why would I do this if I hate it so much? I don't know if it's making me that much happier or stronger. There's little tweaks like that. Yeah.
The 10%.
Yeah. So take away, figure something else out.
Cool. Well, I wanted to go into this because maybe it's a University of Portland thing, and especially I know at least with the Rob Connors guys, and you try to push this on me or at least a few athletes, but they love it, and it seems there's something about going on about this, the vegan diet. So this started out in 2010, becoming vegan. What made the switch, and what challenges and benefits have you identified with it over the past 6 years?
Yeah. I was learning a lot about the environment through my classes, my business classes and sustainability classes at UP, University of Portland. And it made me feel like I needed to do more in my daily life, whether, you know, there's the simple things like recycling and those basics. But from that information flowing at me, Rob Connor pounding it at the team, it was something that I felt called to try. And I in my blog, I said I was a cold turkey vegan, It really was. I ended up giving any of my non-vegan foods to my housemates, and I just stopped. And my body, though, it responded fine. I didn't get necessarily more energy or less. It just liked it. And I didn't have any cravings to go back and have cheese or yogurt or meat. It just really worked for my body. And I probably had balanced my diet pretty well without trying too hard. Now I try really hard to make sure everything's good because it's been so long being vegan. But my body liked it. My mind really liked it. I knew I was doing the right thing for the world. And so, yeah, I've kept at it. Yeah, I was obsessed with checking my blood for a while to make sure my levels were good and that I wasn't just, you know, going off with Rob Connor and sailing that ship. And my levels were strong. So as long as you're being responsible, I think it's great. So yeah, I am on the vegan train and I plan to be the rest of my life. Yeah.
What have you noticed have been like a key to success to making that transfer to vegan, especially mm-hmm. for an athlete who needs, got to have your protein intake, mm-hmm. got to have the high calorie intake, got to have mm-hmm. the hydration and
yeah,
maybe some, I know a lot of people say that's not enough. I'm going to have a dip in the middle of the day. I got to have this to keep me going. What have been some things you're like, no. Here's an adjustment you got to make.
Yeah. The most common question is definitely, how do you get your protein?
Yeah.
And, you know, the best answer to that, how do you get your protein? Food. Yeah. Like, it is in food. And you want to make sure you have enough calories. But if, as long as you're eating, protein is in a lot of different foods that people, mm-hmm. it's not the buzz foods like, you know, your chicken and your steak. But, I'm a big snacker, so I do eat a lot throughout the day. Mm. But yeah, just eating. Yeah. And, now I'm forgetting what your question was exactly, but
just any tips or tricks. So trips, someone who wants to make that transition or like, oh, I'll try it for a week or so. Like mm-hmm. what are some things that help support someone who's like, I'm mm-hmm. thinking about it, but I'm scared because of the protein idea, or, mm-hmm. or I don't know what the right snack is or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a mental trap to change to being vegan, because you think all of those, you look at your plate and there's a big section of your plate that's missing. And so if you cannot mm-hmm. think about it as what am taking that chicken out and what do I put in? If you can just kind of change your thinking that it's now a bowl, a layered bowl of rice and beans and avocado and veggies, that you're not just taking something out. You have to completely change your thinking. Mm. And if every item that was meat or dairy, you're now trying to replace it, it's that is a difficult way of thinking about it. So yeah, you kind of just have to shake it and take a clean approach to eating. If that even makes sense.
It sounds like just being open to, okay, I'm going to try this out. It's mm-hmm. an experiment, just like a lot of things in life can be, mm-hmm. and just see how it goes.
Yeah.
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 Cool. I was curious with, you know, you're sponsored, if I have the list correctly, Wazelle, yep. Zenza, Newton, Honey Stinger, one of my favorites.
Yeah, they're great.
Head Sweat, Core Power Yoga, and mm-hmm. Cedar Mill Chiropractic Clinic.
Yeah.
And you even have your own discount codes. it's like you become a little shining star in that of like, you get to do what you love and people are recognizing it. Companies are recognizing it and throwing you things. Has that put you more in a state of gratitude?
I feel very thankful, okay. first of all. And it is also exciting to me to represent brands of companies that are really solid, that have great people behind them, really products that are good for the world. And like I said, just really kind people. And the ambassador programs, they want to pour into athletes. And so it's really special to be a part of those communities. But yeah, as far as sponsors go, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. What was your question? Because then I can get back to it.
Just what that experience has been like to be like, oh, I'm just still training, but mm-hmm. now I get okay. stuff.
I'm back now. It makes one of the most powerful parts of it, I think, has been learning to be incredibly transparent about your goals. Mm. And that has been a wonderful opportunity to constantly be sharing with those ambassador programs, the other ambassadors or the followers. Wazelle has an insane following, and to share that I want to run this time at this race and this is what I'm doing to accomplish it and this is where I'm falling short, and sharing that journey I never did that at University of Portland. You talk about it a little bit with your teammates, but sometimes it was like the rule about Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club. Isn't that what the saying is? Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, now I mean, outside of running, I can't think of a goal that a human sets and they share it with all of their family, all of their coworkers. They post about it every week. They put it up on their blogs. They're just screaming. I mean, I'm screaming it from the rooftop what I want to do. And it is, it's a lot of accountability, and it's also really empowering. And so I think that's one of the really special things that come out of having sponsors is representing them as a company and going after your goals and being transparent about the failures and the accomplishments. Yeah. Mm.
Sounds like there's a level of accountability that comes.
Major.
Like, I'm announcing this.
Yeah.
I can't bail on it because now the world's reading my blog they know that this is something I need to do.
Yeah.
But it also sounds like it creates a support team as well.
I don't feel like my back's up against the wall with pressure. I feel lifted by these sponsors, especially Wazelle. They're just fierce women that are loving the sport and sharing with each other, and it's great. And if it gets to a point where I feel pressured, then in that moment at the Olympic trials, then I'm losing the joy, and then I need to reevaluate and check in where I'm going. But right now I feel so lifted, and the fire is flaming strong underneath me. Yeah.
That sounds like an amazing feeling.
It's pretty great.
Awesome. So before we get into some of our closing questions.
Okay.
Recently engaged?
I am. Yes.
How has that played a role in your training and excitement or kind of like work balance, or has anything changed because of that?
Yes. So Zach is a fan of running. He runs as well. But his talents are also spread in other athletic activities too. He enjoys the gym and biking, and so he is more balanced, I would say. I mean, when you're after a goal and you're an elite athlete, you're very focused on one thing, and so it's refreshing to see his activities and different ways of maintaining fitness and staying healthy. But he supports me a lot. He at the Olympic trials got my athlete support badge, so he had access to certain areas. Oh, and okay. So it said athlete support on the badge, and that was like his identity for that week, and he was really excited about that. So that made me feel special. He has definitely been selfless, helping me reach my goals. And this weekend he is racing the Shamrock race here in Portland, and I am not racing, and I'm cheering him on. So that is a fun way to be in a relationship, for it to go both ways, to be able to support each other.
To be each other's super fans.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So in our closing questions, what's a challenge you're looking to conquer in the next 6 to 12 months?
I am looking to challenge myself weekly with other elite runners. A lot of my training leading up to the trials, I did a lot of it solo, so that I could push myself to the limit and not either be pushed too hard or to hold back because I was with a group. And so it was a little more selfish and to reach that goal. And this year, I'd like it to be a chapter of training more with other women on a regular basis. And so I look to do that here in Portland, to train more with teammates on a cadence, and also to race more with groups. To enter fields that have a not just a sprinkling of elite athletes, but to have a whole field.
Yeah.
And to put myself in those competitive environments with more women. And I think I was a little timid with my training, trying to train by myself, trying to make sure that everything was like just Lindy and very, very to a T, and nothing would get in my way. I didn't have to wait for someone if they were late. You know, I was just selfish. And even with races, I was only, there'd be like two elites to run with or something. And now I just want to dive in. And yeah, I'm excited about that. Yeah.
Great. Mm-hmm. It really sounds like stepping into that competitive environment, and
yeah,
you're a part of it, and you are it. You're going to the next level with it.
It's crazy though to do a lot of those long runs by yourself. So I don't want to do that anymore. Definitely. Yeah.
I think a lot of people can relate to that. They go down a bigger road. It's like, it's getting quiet over here.
Like, what is the meaning of life? You're just mile 28. Yeah, I know.
How many talks are like that have happened in Forest Park runs. Yeah. If you had a chance to talk to the high school version of yourself, what would you tell her?
I think high school Lindy did a good job not overtraining, but I think I would still tell her to keep the joy in it and say yes to more relays and more fun events, where I would get so focused on just running the mile and I didn't want to tire myself out in another track meet or something like that. And so to say yes to some of those extra races and to have fun more with my teammates, probably. Yeah.
More fun.
Yeah, more fun.
I don't think anyone would argue against that one. And before we get into our final question here, how can we support you? So if anyone listening catches you online, whether it's the blog or discount, how can people support you in this journey?
Oh, wow. That's a question that I love. You know, I think it's great to be followed on social media and to get the likes. I enjoy knowing that people are interested in running, and not just my running, but the pursuit of improvement in sport. Mm-hmm. So that makes me happy. But I guess to feel supported, it makes me happy knowing how many people are on the start line. And so the more people that are running and enjoying it too, just that brings me joy. So not just for me, I hope that it's a contagious sport, and that would empower me to know that other people are trying to make the best version of themselves and reach their best fitness for that point in life. Because like I said, there's lots of seasons with running, and so a PR before you're, there's just all sorts of different times for new PRs. So sign up to races. That'd make me happy.
Great.
Yeah.
Our final question, in your words, where does greatness begin?
I think greatness begins when you decide to do it. And when you decide to do, whether it's a race, whether you decide to go for a challenging interview, whether you make that decision to go for it, that's great. And so there's all sorts of different levels of greatness, but it's inspiring and great when someone could go for it and fail. You know, that the whether you get there or you don't, whether I made the trials or I didn't, deciding to try, and a lot of my teammates here in Portland that decided to try and they just were a sliver close of making it, that's greatness. Cool, I made it, but they all tried. And that's just as amazing. And that is greatness.
I like it. Yeah, definitely a lot of people forget failure is a part of every journey. But pushing through it and knowing you put it out there, mm-hmm. it's a part of your own greatness of learning yourself. And yeah. you can only become stronger from that.
And don't even call it failure.
Yeah. 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 I like to call them learning
yeah.
experiences.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and do it in 24 hours to reflect on it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, it's been a blast sharing the classroom to you, sharing the track with you, and now sharing MindFuel podcast.
Awesome. So. I loved it. Thank you for all the great questions. And I have so much fun talking about running. So it's, of course, a joy for me to be here with you.
Thank you, Lindy, for sharing your story with me today. It's been wonderful watching you grow from the University of Portland to where you are today, and all the sponsorships and the excitement that has come from it. For those who want to keep up with Lindy and what her upcoming races are, what it's like to be at that level, some behind the scenes, or any questions about being vegan or her diet changes, in the show notes here, I've linked to Lindy's blog, as well as you can find her on Facebook and all those other fun social media outlets. And she's a great writer and also has some great pictures of what's going on out there on the races. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let me know, share what some insight that you got from it, and share with a friend. Please let the goodness grow. I have some more exciting guests coming up in the next few months, as this is an Olympic trials year, and there's a lot of excitement and buzz coming on throughout the nation as you start hearing more of those stories. And you can definitely count on MindFuel catching some of the stories and sharing what's going on out there on the champion mindset on and off the track and field world. Log on to CoachJoaquinTraining.com and be sure to subscribe to the emails to stay in the loop of everything that's happening and MindFuels, as well as some things that don't always make it to the website but are email only. Thank you for listening today. Rock on.